Bolin chewed over the matter for a moment. A hotel in Baton Rouge. Why there? It was the state capital, but otherwise of little importance. Louisiana wasn't the home to any terrorist organizations that he knew of, aside from the KKK, and they were so riddled with FBI undercover agents they couldn't buy a hot dog without Uncle Sam knowing about it. It had to be a meeting place. So the question became, were there any good targets in Louisiana? With that thought, Bolin went cold inside as he comprehended that the holiday celebration Dillard had been talking about was Fat Tuesday, the day before the start of the Catholic holiday of Lent. And in the great southern state of Louisiana, that meant only one thing, Mardi Gras. The biggest party in North America and the absolute perfect place to detonate a small-yield nuke to get the greatest number of civilian casualties covered by the world press. If the Zodiac was going to Mardi Gras, then Bolin would just have to be there first. Leaving the office, he closed the broken door as best he could, forcing the key between the door and the jamb to help hold it in place. It wouldn't pass muster at close inspection, but it might work on a casual inspection from someone merely glancing down the hallway. Bolin opened the camouflage door slowly. The madam behind the little desk seemed tense, her legs tucked out of sight. She avoided looking at Bolin as he left the room. All of the customers on the couch were gone, and the atmosphere of the brothel had changed. Something was wrong, and Bolin could feel it. In the short hall, he checked his guns. The moment he stepped outside, the executioner knew he'd walked into a trap. The prostitute in the rocking chair was gone. When he'd arrived, the wild grass around the parking lot had been full of the noise of crickets and locusts. The grass and the rows of cars beyond were now deadly quiet. Lashing out, Bolin smashed the red light bulb above the door and dove to the ground, rolling for the bushes. Rolling into a crouch, Bolin pulled both of his guns and waited for the flashes to come again. Out in the darkness, someone was using two guns, his body faintly illuminated by those flashes.
Gotcha.
He's in the bushes!
Bolin was already on the move, darting behind a convertible to find a large man cradling a sawed-off shotgun.
Huh? Oh!
His head snapped backward, and Bolin caught the shotgun as it fell from the man's limp fingers.
Let's hope your car insurance is paid up, fellas.
Now the gunmen could no longer talk to one another, and that was fine by Bolin. While they were trying not to shoot one another, anybody the soldier found carrying heat was a viable target.
Oh, where the hell is he? Is he over? I think I...
Someone stupidly rose to their feet while pulling out a grenade. The man never had time to fix his mistake, nor pull the pin. Bolin moved to the fallen man and recovered the grenade, along with two more, and something else wrapped in cloth. Chancing a quick look, Bolin frowned at the sight of a lock of long blonde hair, the roots still sticky with fresh blood. The light was weak, but still good enough for the soldier to see that the hair was the same color as that Julie woman's from the poolside party. She had to have been caught on the telephone with Jimmy, and Dillard beat the truth out of her. Thoroughly rattled, customers fled the brothel any way they could, some through second-story windows. When the shooting paused for them to check the damage, the executioner stood, his Desert Eagle at the ready.
Son of a bitch must have night goggles.
Bolin realized that he knew that voice. It was Santorino. He ripped off a side-view mirror from a rusty old Toyota and angled it about until finding the big man. Holding a pistol, Miguel Santorino had his right arm in a sling and the left side of his face was swaddled in bandages, probably from the fiery exhaust of the Stinger. He was also standing alongside Ernest Diller. The Brazilian killer had come looking for Zalharas and found Gorilla instead. Not good.
Well, turn on the headlights! Blind the fucker!
The crime boss was holding an M16-M203 combo assault rifle, but Bolin hadn't yet heard the familiar sound of the U.S. Army weapon in operation.
Saving it to protect your own ass, Gorilla.
Bolin pulled the pin on a fat grenade and waited for a chance for a clean throw. But civilians were everywhere, some of them actually trying to start their cars and drive away through the middle of a firefight.
Don't move!
Clutching his clothing, a terrified man whirled, holding his jingling car keys.
Please, don't!
Shit, it isn't him.
Zeroing in on the voice, Bolin peeled off the spoon and flipped the grenade high above the parked cars. Anyone standing was thrown to the ground. The gunmen struggled to their feet again. Already running low behind the lines of parked cars, Bolin was almost in the tall grass.
Shit, boss! We have to go!
Finish the job! This man you call Cooper dies right here or we do!
This ain't the Alamo, asshole. We'll catch him some other day. You ain't paid enough to fight with Texas Rangers. It's over.
The men lowered their weapons and started shuffling away from the whorehouse.
Nobody leaves! Now do as you're ordered!
Ah, fuck you!
Reaching the street during the confusion, Bolin took careful aim at the remaining cars. Soon, every vehicle was disabled, and Bolin was headed away from the killing ground, satisfied that Dillard and his men wouldn't be going anywhere for a while, except for a long chat with the police. Turning off Markham Street, the bank truck drove through the sparse nighttime traffic onto the Broadway Bridge that arched over the Arkansas River. It connected the slowly dying metropolis of Little Rock with the much older, thriving city of North Little Rock. As the truck passed by, a pedestrian brought a fat plastic tube up to his shoulder. The truck violently exploded as the front wheels blew off and the bulletproof window shattered. The 10-ton truck reared up onto its back tires, then came slamming back down onto the bridge, flames rising up from the burning chassis. The river police tugs came alive and started cycling open the wire mesh gate that closed off their paddocks. On the Broadway Bridge, the pedestrian leveled another plastic tube. A sedan raced along the bridge from out of North Little Rock, savagely braking alongside the burning bank truck. The Scion poured out to join Dog Mariano. Heavily armed, each of the S2 agents was dressed in black and wearing ski masks. Mariano tossed the spent launcher over the bridge railing. Then he and Georgina Misne hurried to the rear doors of the smashed vehicle. In only a few seconds, the blaze was sufficiently under control.
Plastique's ready. Stand by.
Pulling on gloves, Mariano climbed through the tattered opening and shoved aside the dead guards to start ripping open bags of money and toss them over the railing. Most packs of cash fell to the water and started to sink out of sight, but a few of the bundles came apart in the descent.
Heads up, Pedrosa!
Using heavy-duty shears, Misne cut open the larger bags and began tossing the individual packs to Pedrosa, who was still carrying a fire extinguisher. Standing guard, Zalhares watched for any sign of police cars or helicopters. One of the packs of money tossed by Misne exploded in midair in a purple spray. Pedrosa instantly fogged it with a long burst of icy cold CO2 from the extinguisher. The gas froze the dye so that it condensed into a liquid and fell impotently to the pavement, unable to permanently stain the people, cars, or precious cash.
There's only one dye pack per bag. Take it.
Misne started on another. Heaving the bundles over one by one, Pedrosa waited for the expected bursts as the dye pack got the measured 10 feet away from the truck. When nothing happened, he made the catch and threw the money into the open trunk of the waiting sedan.
90 seconds, how much do we have?
100,000 so far.
Then keep going. 85 seconds. 84. So kind of the police to be prompt. And so thoughtful of you to steal that gasoline truck, mister.
Zalhares moved to the opposite railing of the bridge. But the shell went high and impacted on a riverboat restaurant, blowing a hole in the side of the moored vessel and filling the interior with shrapnel and flame.
Damn the luck! Missed.
Zalhares aimed higher and successfully blew up a fire plug. The streaming water obstructed any possible view from that direction. By now, the trunk of the sedan was stacked full of packs of money, mostly in large denominations. Mariano was tossing the smaller bills, 20s and 50s, into the Arkansas River, the surface thick with a spreading oval of bills moving in the gentle current.
Time! Let's go! And don't forget to cover the trail we left.
Dropping a partially opened bag of cash, Mariano climbed out of the armored truck and headed for the sedan.
You don't think thermite grenades are too much?
I think they're just a thing.
The sedan barely reached the end of the bridge before the grenades exploded.
Now it'll take them days to find out how much, if any, money was taken.
Good luck for us.
Luck belongs to the quickest gun.
Driving past the ruined fire hydrant, Pedrosa hit the brakes and allowed the gushing stream of water to splash over the sedan, washing off the fresh coat of black water-based paint and exposing the light blue paint job underneath. Rolling onto the busy streets of North Little Rock, Pedrosa pulled to the curb to get out of the way as fire trucks and ambulances went hurtling past them. Police cars appeared from everywhere, and one squad car slowed to look directly at the blue sedan. Faking surprise, Pedrosa blinked at the officer and had started to roll down the window when the cop changed his mind and pulled away.
I guess we don't look like killers and thieves.
How much did we get?
At a guess, $500,000, mostly in hundreds and $500 bills.
Nothing smaller?
Of course. A couple of thousand in 20s and 50s.
We are not fools to only take big bills.
Good enough. Now, while the police are busy at the bridge and park, we will visit the arms shop across town.
Are you sure they store illegal weapons?
According to the CIA records, yes. Even though most of what we need is conventional caliber ammunition, 22s, 45s, and such. How many rounds remain for the Urus?
4 blocks each. After that, they're dead. There is no way we can get more of the ammo blocks in America.
Then we should get some additional machine guns and save the submachine guns for emergencies.
If there is a choice, I recommend AK-47 assault rifles. The ammunition will be easy to obtain, and the range is good.
Uzi machine pistols are better, much lighter.
But they have no range.
We'll take whatever they have. Dog, you get grenades. Minas, rocket launchers, RPG, whatever is in stock. Georgina, concentrate on the weapons and spare ammo. I will stand guard. Remember to touch nothing in the store itself. That will have many alarms. Only the illegal weapons and ammo in the rear storeroom can be taken. The owners have no wish for the police to find those, and we can take whatever we want, and it will not be reported.
Not to steal from a thief is not a crime. It is merely irony.
So you have read Cervantes, our friend?
Of course. Before you set me free, I had many years in jail to expand my education.
Should we kill the shopkeeper?
Of course. Afterward.
Good.
And then we can proceed to our last delivery.
Mizne had managed to slip out of the black paramilitary garb and bandages binding down her chest, and was bent low to slip into a snug sports bra. She wasn't embarrassed to be naked around the men, but she would be easily visible to the passengers in the cars passing by, and that would attract too much attention. This was the southern United States, where everybody was a hypocrite and sex was only had behind locked doors. Nudity was a part of life, just like violence. What was the point of pretending it didn't exist?
Oh, God, that's better. I hope we never have to bind me flat again.
After this last delivery, we'll never have to do anything we don't want to ever again.
In a whirlwind of cushioning air, the Black Hawk helicopter landed on the grassy field. The craft was still setting its landing gear into the lawn when the door to the nearby log cabin swung open and 5 men walked out carrying bulky duffel bags.
Lion, sure you got everything?
As the head of security for the farm, Buck Green really should have been in his office watching this on a video monitor. But he liked to get his hands into the field work of the teams as much as possible.
Sure as hell hope so.
Carl Lyons' icy blue eyes professionally studied the sleek helicopter. It was a sweet ship, and ready to haul his combat team anywhere. Recalled from a long-overdue dinner with an old friend, Lyons was wearing tan slacks and a sports coat that seemed loud enough to be picked up on radar.
Anything else we might need can be airdropped in the field.
Rosario, the politician, Blancanales, pushed back the sliding door on the side of the military machine.
We're taken from the dead hands of the enemy.
Herman Gadget Schwartz waited to toss his duffel bag onto the growing pile inside the shaking Blackhawk.
Give us a shout! Anywhere, anytime!
Especially if you need an extra hand. Always be glad to help. I know Texas better than any of you damn Yankees.
The Cyan are most likely long gone from there by now. But thanks for the offer. Be glad to have either of you at my back any day.
They all knew that every mission could be the last, so there was never any time for halfway measures in friendship. They were brothers in blood, having waded through rivers of the stuff more than once in the service of their country. Nodding farewell, the group parted, Green and Kissinger going back inside the farmhouse, and Able Team climbing into the waiting Blackhawk. As the men took their seats, it was obvious that the adjustable interior of the craft had been configured for a combat mission. 4 of the wall-mounted jump seats had been removed, and 2 medical litters installed in their place, along with a 12-drawer medical cabinet that oddly resembled a tool tower system used in most garages. There was also a defibrillator and an assortment of wall hooks for hanging bags of plasma and saline to treat the wounded. But that still left 7 seats for the 3-man team and plenty of space for their bags of equipment.
Got everything in here but a jukebox! I thought we were supposed to be low profile.
We're listed as a National Guard Medevac unit, so that should cover any questions nicely. We're guardsmen on maneuvers. J-A-D-D, you know.
Just another damn drill. I hear that, brother.
And it never hurts to have a few bandages handy when lead is flying.
With one hand glued to the joystick, Grimaldi was already throwing switches and setting the multi-throttles of the military helicopter. A wide and complex control board covered the entire front of the craft, and another curved along the ceiling, with an additional panel banked with rows of buttons and dials spread between the two front seats in the high-tech cockpit.
I see we're equipped with enough plasma for 20 men. Just a safety precaution, in case we need to do a lavage procedure or full transfusion because of radiation poisoning. This Hawk is proof to a lot of rads, EM pulses too. But you boys will be buck naked in the field.
Good thing I brought my lead underwear. Well, what are you waiting for, flyboy? Let's rock and roll.
What's the itinerary?
First, we land at a private airfield in Maryland.
And then?
And then we wait, old buddy. We know where Mac is at the present, and we know where he thinks Cyan is. But until we get the word, we sit and wait for the go code.
Suddenly, a lush hill dropped away in front of the helicopter, and they were flying above a highway jammed with traffic. Able team did one final check-in with Brignola.
Any reports of suspicious activity overseas?
Overseas? No. However, Homeland Security has already stopped two groups of Arab terrorists from trying to sneak into the country.
Were they from Unity?
Unknown. But from their equipment, it was clear that the men were here to obtain the Zodiacs and to smuggle them out undetected.
Faraday net?
Exactly.
So they want to duplicate the Zodiacs. Damnation. Crack the cascade design and start flooding the black market with these things.
That's my conclusion, too. Which makes it a cast-iron necessity that the Zodiacs are recovered or are destroyed in the field.
This was more than the ancient battle cry of come back with your shield or on it. Able team had been authorized to lose one American city to save 100 more. The soldiers had dealt with these sorts of odds on a personal level before, but never on such a scale with civilian lives.
This comes from the top?
Authorized by the president. Nobody likes it. But what other course do we have?
Get them all back and kill the Cyan where they stand.
Bolin rode the purring BMW motorcycle through the growing celebration of Mardi Gras. Walking was completely out of the question, and driving a car even more so, as the city was packed solid. If he could have skimmed over New Orleans and the Cessna, Bolin would have done so gladly, but the EM scanner he was using only had a range of 4 blocks, which put it far outside the operational deck of any airplane and well within the blast radius of an exploding Zodiac. Arriving at a private airport just outside of New Orleans, where questions were never asked about unexpected visitors, Bolin had exited the plane and hurried to the brand new BMW K1200 LT motorcycle Hal Brignola had arranged to have waiting for him. Bolin had decided to handle the Big Easy himself and asked Barbara Price to send Able Team to Baton Rouge. The Beamer was a windswept black beauty, wide and comfortable, with all of the amenities. But more importantly, while a Yamaha was faster and a Harley had more brute power, the BMW possessed the special feature of being driven by piston instead of a linked chain. During Mardi Gras, the city belonged to foot traffic, and the few mad souls willing to ride a bicycle through the jostling, pushing, shoving morass of inebriated people.
Hey, Gloomy! Smile!
As Bolin turned, a busty redhead lifted her shirt high and wiggled as numerous onlookers tossed her bead necklaces. Smiling briefly, Bolin rolled on past the jubilation, cymbals clanging and bottles passed freely among strangers, with more college girls flashing their breasts. It was one hell of a party, that was for sure. Pausing at an intersection, Bolin watched as an amateur parade of homemade floats trundled by. The outrageous costumes and hot music of the dancers more than making up for any lack in the aesthetic quality of the construction. But then a deliberate motion in the crowd caught his attention, and Bolin turned to see a frowning New Orleans cop stride over with an expression of pure trouble. Before the uniformed officer even spoke, Bolin flipped open his FBI commission booklet and gave the man a good long look before tucking it away again.
Trouble brewing, sir?
Purely a ballerina visit.
Keeping us on our toes. Gotcha. Nothing important happening for sure now, right?
Nothing that needs police assistance.
Some topless women walked by arm in arm. Video cameras followed their every move, and the air was full of confetti and streamers thrown from the second-story balconies of hotels and homes.
Sure would be nice if I wasn't on duty.
Phew, I hear that. Well, you drive careful now, sir. Best stay away from Bourbon Street.
Why's that?
The cop stopped and pushed back his cap. In the throbbing ocean of costumes and flash photography, only Bolin and the police officer stood in conversation, a small island of self-control in the joyous throng.
Well, sir, the DPW is doing some emergency roadwork there. Seems a drainage pipe broke, so now Bourbon Street has got more water in it than free beer. Swamp water, too. And that'll foul the electronic carb on that supercharged twin you're riding.
Thanks for the tip. I'll keep it in mind.
Sure enough. No drinking and driving now, you hear?
Still waiting for the parade to pass by, Bolin watched the cop move effortlessly through the mob, then suddenly dart forward to grab a man by the arm, making him drop the wallet he had just lifted from a drunken fat man. Pinning the pickpocket with an arm lock, the cop hustled him out of sight and the endless party continued, completely unaware of the many mini-dramas happening in their midst. The parade finally ended, and Bolin rolled through the intersection to continue his methodical sweep of the boisterous city. Under ideal conditions, he would have liked to check New Orleans in two-block sections, but there wasn't time for that. If the new owners of the Zodiac were already here, then the hammer could fall at any moment. He had to trust the team at the farm and check the city in four-block patterns. If he missed by a block somewhere or went right by the briefcase before it was taken out of its Faraday net, then the Big Easy would suffer a disaster that would make the deadly floods of the last century look like a balmy summer day. The blocks rolled by in endless procession, the crowds all starting to resemble one another as the hours slowly crept past. Twilight was approaching, the city starting to unleash its glory of colored lights before Bolin was even halfway through his first reconnaissance. A group of college-age boys walked toward him carrying a boombox large enough to serve as a footlocker. Bolin felt it in his chest, even from across the street. As they turned a corner and the volume dropped, a subdued vibration came from the EM scanner in his shirt pocket. Bolin yanked it out to see the meters fluctuating into the green. A Zodiac had been activated within a three-block radius. The bomb wasn't just uncovered, but live and ready to blow. Moving the scanner, Bolin got a definite reading and started driving as fast as possible.
Hey, watch where you're going, you crazy son bitch!
More than one person made angry complaints about the rude guy on the bike forcing his way through the crowd, but he ignored them, concentrating on the small beeping device held in the palm of his hand. Starting down Bourbon Street, Bolin saw the meter indicate the other way. The Zodiac wasn't moving. He had almost gone past it. The bomb was here, within less than a block. Bolin headed directly into the corner hotel. This was it, ground zero. The lobby was wildly decorated in every imaginable color. A big sign advertised a buffet in the main dining room, and every member of the staff seemed to be wearing their body weight in bead necklaces. Bolin ignored the crowded elevators and took the stairs, stopping at each floor to confirm a negative reading until reaching the top level. The scanner indicated that the Zodiac was in a room facing Bourbon Street, overlooking the main path of the big parade tonight. It made sense. That would be where all of the television cameras would be pointed. Going down the hallway, Bolin got a strong reading from room 412, which weakened as he went past. This was it. He mentally reviewed the procedures for shutting down a Zodiac. If he shot the wrong man, the real trigger man would drop the briefcase and New Orleans would vanish. And the same thing might happen if he got the correct man and he died too quickly. Timing was everything. Bolin needed to shock the enemy senseless for a few vital seconds, to hold them still until he could locate the Zodiac and move for a capture. A stun grenade would only make them trigger it instantly, as would using sleep gas, a flash canister, BZ gas, or damn near anything else that came to mind. Bolin had only one chance at getting this right.
The Scion is here. Zalharis is here.
Bolin went flat against the wall, watching the door of 412. It burst open, revealing a blonde man holding a briefcase in one hand, the knuckles on that hand clenched white, and a gun in the other.
Dummkopf bastards! Trying to steal it back, eh?
Bolin fired through the German's wrist holding the gun, then dropped the Beretta and grabbed for the man's other hand holding the Zodiac. Bolin grabbed the handle of the Zodiac with both hands, and the blonde realized what was happening. Snarling in fury, he simply released the handle, but Bolin was already there with both hands, holding on for a million lives. Yanking the briefcase away from the stunned man, Bolin lashed a sidekick directly in the German's throat, sending him reeling into another man.
Reinhold!
Brandishing the Desert Eagle, Bolin stepped into the room to look for any other briefcase. Behind him stood a little man wearing glasses, holding a .38 caliber Walther PPK. Bolin turned.
Drop your gun.
Then Bolin was tackled from behind and slammed into a mirror. He dropped the Desert Eagle as pain sliced his cheek. But he still held on to the Zodiac. Nothing was going to make him let go of that. Ramming out an elbow, Bolin crushed the big German's nose. As he staggered back, Bolin kicked him in the groin.
Die, Schwein!
Another German appeared, brandishing a briefcase. A second Zodiac? There was no logical reason for the man to gesture with it like a weapon, but Bolin took no chances and dove sideways, going over the bed. The briefcase was a disguised machine gun. Bolin was on his feet and already moving. Swinging a decorative end table, Bolin lunged for the German, but the trick briefcase pounded the flimsy furniture out of his grasp. Bolin desperately swung the Zodiac and smacked it into the bleeding wrist of his attacker. The man went stiff with pain and the soldier charged. He rammed a shoulder into the terrorist, who lost the trick briefcase. The German crashed into a tall armoire and rebounded, reeling weakly. A river of blood poured down his face, and a wet clump of hair jutted from the sharp corner of the antique hardwood cabinet. As Bolin went for the Desert Eagle, the bathroom door slammed open, and out strode a giant man wearing a sleeveless t-shirt, the tattoo of a Nazi swastika on his hairless chest.
Pissy bastard!
The behemoth charged with both hands raised for a chokehold. Sidestepping the rush, Bolin let the giant go by, then kicked him in the small of the back, adding new force to the original momentum. The Nazi hit the wall hard. He smoothly pivoted, fists raised in a boxer's crouch. The soldier dodged out of the way as he moved with the strike to spin and raise an arm just in time to catch the haymaker on his forearm. It was like being hit with an axe, but he took the pain and swung the Zodiac behind his back and out of reach. Ever shifting position, Bolin found an opening and buried two stiff fingers into the man's left eye. Incredibly, the giant Nazi lunged forward and wrapped his massive arms around Bolin in a crushing hug. Pinned and unable to breathe, Bolin drove his forehead into his adversary's face, hitting the broken nose once more. But with diminished results. The big man had to be past his threshold of pain, raw adrenaline blocking the nerves. The terrorist was horribly wounded, but for a brief time, he was totally invulnerable to any additional pain. Switching tactics, Bolin kicked out with both of his legs and went down, dragging the giant along with him to the littered carpet. Then he threw himself sideways, forcing his captive to roll over the broken slivers of mirror, one of them piercing the man's leg as he tightened his death grip. The world was starting to take on a red fog for Bolin. His hand clutching the Zodiac was also weakening, his fingertips beginning to tingle from lack of circulation. He only knew for certain that the handle was still depressed by the irrefutable fact that he was still alive. Clawing on the floor with his free hand, Bolin found a sliver of jagged glass. Incredibly, the German still refused to relinquish his crushing hold, but the hug lessened. Bolin summoned his last ounce of strength to bury the makeshift dagger into the man's kidney. The Nazi's arms weakened as dark blood ran from his mouth. In a surge of motion, Bolin was loose. The soldier staggered across the hotel room, searching amid the debris of the frenzied combat. Out of the corner of his vision, Bolin saw the giant Nazi raise a leg to fumble at his ankle, exposing a small pistol in a hideaway holster. Bolin found what he had been looking for. Dropping to a knee, he grabbed the Heckler & Koch gun case and pressed the handle. The recoil was uncontrollable, but by sheer strength, Bolin got it to track on the giant of a man and stitch him across the chest. Then, from out of nowhere, gore-streaked fingers grabbed the Zodiac and tugged hard. Then the German's hand closed on the dropped Walther PPK. Moving the Zodiac behind him for protection, Bolin kicked a chair in the way of the incoming rounds, and the wood shattered. Bolin walked to the dropped Desert Eagle and leveled the weapon, knowing full well there was only a single round remaining in the clip.
I surrender. No, arrest me. I need medical attention.
I'm no cop.
Wait!
Almost on cue, the happy crowd below roared to life as the grand parade of Bourbon Street officially began. After checking the rest of the room, Bolin moved the bodies out of the way. He sat on the bed with the CIA briefcase. There was a small dent in the side where it had caught a ricochet, but the damage was superficial. Anything worse, and the Zodiac would have automatically detonated. In spite of the pain of his clenched hand, Bolin took a moment to gather his thoughts before commencing the disarming procedure. Moving with surgical precision, he repeated each step twice in his mind before actually doing it, knowing that there would be no second chances. The soldier refused to release his grip on the handle until the internal indicators went dim and his pocket EM scanner registered zero activity. However, it was still a tense moment as he let go of the handle.
Time for the call.
Brugnola!
I got one.
Great news, Stryker. But Jesus, you sound terrible.
I've been better. That's enough for now.
Yeah, I guess so. Any breakage?
Nothing that can be traced back to you.
Fair enough. Was it our alphabet friends from down south?
More the Iron Eagle type.
Adolf's boys, eh? Should have known the Volksfever would be after it. Just their sort of weapon. You need anything?
Just getting this damn thing off my hands will be fine, Hal.
Hold it a minute. Okay. Bear has your location. I can have the local FBI bomb squad at the hotel in 20 minutes.
Not here. Security's impossible today. We'd better do this someplace outside of town.
Wherever you want.
There's a car park near the Northern Cemetery. I'll call back with detailed instructions later. You'll be the relay between us and give constant report until the FBI arrives, and I know for sure it is them. If there's anything suspicious about them, I'm taking them down. It isn't safe here. I'm heading out.
Eric Strumfield and his team went to say their goodbyes to the rest of the Volksfever elite down the hallway. They noticed the spent brass shells on the carpeting in front of the closed door.
Eins, zwei, drei.
They swept into the room using a standard two-on-two formation. They stopped in their tracks at the sight of carnage at their feet. Every member of the Volksfever was dead, and the Zodiac was nowhere to be seen. Only the Heckler & Koch briefcase with the trick machine gun inside still remained, the carpeting coated with empty brass.
Good God! How could this be? We were gone only a few minutes.
15. We should go. There is nothing to do here.
What's
up? We know who did this. It was those S2 cowards. Who else could it be? The FBI, perhaps the CIA? They have rules. They always take prisoners.
That should be our response, Commander.
Find the Scion and kill them all as painfully as possible. Then come back with the Zodiac and finish the job.
But sir, that was not our assignment. We are merely guards for this project.
Well, now it is our assignment. We are the hammer of the people, and we shall not let our comrades fall in vain. Honor and blood.
Honor and blood.
Parking the van in a secluded section of the Will Rogers Airport, the Scion took a city bus to the downtown area and walked along the peaceful streets, doubling back every so often to make sure that they weren't being tailed. Dressed casually to blend in with the local citizenry, the S2 team was wearing deliberately scuffed sneakers with white t-shirts tucked into faded blue denims and loose shirts hanging unbuttoned on the outside to cover their holstered weapons. Prepared for trouble, all four S2 agents carried briefcases. Mariano and Pedrosa, armed with a Heckler & Koch gun case each, Zalhares and Mizne each carrying a Zodiac. One of the bombs was armed for detonation. The Scion had been almost caught in a trap once, and they had no intention of allowing such an unthinkable catastrophe to occur again. The sun was high overhead, the sky a clear blue without a cloud in sight. Pausing on North Meridian Street, Zalhares looked over the civilians streaming around and nodded in approval. Aside from the expected male glances of appreciation at Mizne, the Mercs didn't seem to be garnering any undue notice. However, their contact was another matter entirely. From a logistics standpoint, Tulsa was a better city to conduct their clandestine business. But there were very few people of Chinese descent in Tulsa, in spite of the horde of coolies forced to build the great network of railroads across the state. On the other hand, Oklahoma City was bordering on becoming a metropolis with the justifiably famous Chinese restaurant on North Meridian Street that boasted a wild mix of Tex-Mex and Cantonese food. The eatery had received a 4 stars rating for the past 10 years from the city newspaper and was conveniently located near the downtown Civic Center, an equally short walk from the mammoth Cox Business Conference Center. Reaching for blocks, the staggering Cox Pavilion of white stone and mirrored walls housed a combination of exhibit hall and arena capable of holding crowds in excess of 60,000 people. And directly across the street was the world-famous Myriad Botanical Gardens and two luxury hotels. Strangers went unnoticed in this part of Oklahoma City, even tall, scarred strangers carrying identical briefcases. Personally, Zalharis was never happy when dealing with the Red Chinese. Their standards of honor were flexible, to say the least. However, the communists had offered the highest price online, and since he was unable to think of a plausible reason to deny the bid, he had been forced to accept. Suddenly alert, Mizne spun and stepped closer to the others.
The man in the black silk shirt and cowboy hat. He's carrying a weapon on his belt.
FBI?
He is nobody. Do not be concerned. Most of the people around us are armed today.
Why is that?
They are holding a gun show at the Cox Center. It is an annual event, an excellent coverage for us. In a crowd of armed people, we are invisible. No one will notice a single fish in the ocean, eh?
A gun show? This is a joke?
No, my friend, it is not. These Americans love weapons, especially firearms, and often gather in crowds of hundreds of thousands to buy and sell them. It is a very big business, and entirely legal.
But I thought most Americans were not allowed to carry guns.
Until now, he had been scrutinizing the traffic for police cars or military transports, but many of the men and women walking by were wearing shirts and hats bearing the logo of a weapon manufacturer. Smith & Wesson, Heckler & Koch, Glock, Colt, and so on. Some even carried a political slogan about weapons and freedom. And they were doing so in broad daylight without being immediately arrested by the police. It was unbelievable.
Few are allowed to carry concealed weapons without permission, but most of them do own guns.
For what purpose?
To look at them, hold them, revel in the fact that they can own such things? How should I know the workings of such minds?
Incredible. We would have a revolution if such a thing was allowed to occur in Brazil.
Which is why it does not. Ah, look, there is a restaurant.
Studying the building for a few minutes, Zalharis ordered Mariano to stay in place while the others walked past it and took positions near the front door. Then Pedrosa went around the block once, looking for hidden observers. Upon returning, the man gave an all-clear signal, and Mariano joined the others before the Scion proceeded into the restaurant. Golden dragons were painted on the glass doors fronting the hot sidewalk, yet the vestibule inside was icy cold thanks to a strong draft of a ceiling vent. Past some velvet ropes adorned with golden tassels was a waiting area with black and silver embroidered couches. Next was a ridiculous wooden bridge that arched over a babbling creek to reach the artificial island full of tables that composed the majority of the establishment. The ceiling was an ornate array of sculptured plaster in classic Mandarin lettering and raised imperial dragons. The walls, sweeping murals of the Yang River Valley. Sadly, that was now a historic scene from the past, since the communist government had built a massive dam to create a hydroelectric station that would supply power to a dozen cities and 100 factories.
Good afternoon, sir. Do you have a reservation?
Studying her coldly, Zalharis observed that while the woman was in a tight red dress that showed off her slim figure to its full advantage, she was also wearing the flat shoes of a professional who stood all day long, not decorative high heels. The female was a waitress, nothing more.
Yes, under Goldsmith.
Of course, sir. This way, please.
Leading the way, the waitress crossed the delicate bridge and moved through the maze of tables to pass through a set of red lacquered doors marked private. The room inside was empty, bare to the walls, without a scrap of furniture in sight.
What is this?
Your private dining room, sir. As requested. Is something wrong?
No, it will do fine.
Enjoy your meal, sir.
Motioning the others inside, Zalharis used his foot to jam the door open as the men, weapons drawn, spread out for a fast recon of the premises.
Clean. There are no trap doors, listening devices, gas pumps, anything else that I can find.
What do we do now?
We close the door.
Instantly, the Scion pulled handguns in response, but there came a definite dropping sensation as the walls started to rise.
This is an elevator.
These are not those silly German fools from before. We are now dealing with the only superpower in the world aside from America. Stay sharp.
Slowly, the disguised elevator continued downward, the wallpaper ending at the molding to be replaced with bare cinder blocks. Then another door came into view. As the room was still descending, Zalhares pushed the door open to see a vast, empty private dining area. As that rose above them, a third door appeared. Zalhares tried the door, but it seemed to be locked. The following level had a glass window in the stained door. The next doorway was open, showing a dimly lit room filled with row upon row of bunk beds stacked three high, each closed off with chicken wire. Shoeless men lay asleep on thin mattresses or reading technical books under small lights. A few were playing cards. A single woman dressed as a waitress was slowly brushing out her long hair.
It's an entire secret world under Oklahoma.
Under most cities. There are a great many more Chinese in America than the government will ever know about. Most of them slaves.
Slaves?
Indentured servants. It is the same thing. They get loans to pay off their journey to America. Spend the next 20 years paying it off.
And not practice for social communists?
They're communists in name only. Beijing worships power and nothing else.
A black line formed around the base of the moving room, and the Brazilians could only see blackness past the edge of the carpeted floor. Moving so that they stood in a tight group facing outward, the S2 agents waited for the elevator to finally stop. Hinged panels lowered from the sides of the overhead shaft, closing off the hole and sealing them in total darkness. Nobody moved or spoke. Then bright lights crashed on, showing a large room full of young men. An older man with slicked back hair stood unarmed amid the small army. The others were wearing t-shirts and khaki trousers, but he was dressed in a linen suit, the shirt unbuttoned at the collar, showing just the tip of a tattoo on his hairless chest. As his vision adjusted to the differing light levels, Zalhares calmly looked around. The walls were old brick, dark with age, and the ceiling was veined with pipes and electric cables. If there was more to be seen in the sub-basement, it was hidden by the crowd of men and the thick shadows.
You're late.
No, I am early. The world is late.
But since we are born into misery, being late is a blessing. Satisfied?
For now.
Good. I'm Colonel Yang Shun Rao.
Zodiac, do you have our payment?
I'm afraid that I have bad news. The sale is off.
Then prepare to die.
Your people move well, and I see they are not afraid.
Of this rabble? You have too many people jammed down here, Colonel. If a firefight should start, they would be shooting each other more often than us. No, we are not frightened of your cooks and waiters, but we are tired of your games. Now tell us why you are reneging on the deal, old man.
And why we shouldn't remove this shithole from the face of the earth.
His black eyes shining brightly with avarice, Colonel Shun Rao stared hard at the piece of luggage, then glanced briefly at the others held by Pedrosa and Mariano, until settling on the one carried in the gloved fist by Zalhares.
So that is it. The size is amazing. Simply amazing. You brought two, of course, but that was only logical. Liwa! Bring chairs for our guests.
We'll stand. Now talk. My patience grows thin.
The colonel sat sideways and draped an arm across the back. Scowling at the posturing, Zalhares said nothing. It was too contrived to be natural, merely an illusion to mask his body language and to hide his true feelings. With that realization, the Brazilian suddenly understood that he was facing a truly dangerous man.
As for canceling the contract, I really have no choice in the matter. The use of the internet was expedient, but foolhardy. Too many now know about the Zodiacs and have sent people to steal them from you.
Let them try.
Ah, but they have tried already. Several groups have been caught by the new Homeland Security, not to mention the FBI and the CIA. And for them, this is a personal matter, although not of reclaiming their honor, but more a matter of covering their ass. The Americans know you are here, and will do anything to find you and recover the bombs. There have even been some references to your own S2 operating in the country. A big man with many scars, and even more identities.
Santorino? Yes, I know the fool. And he could not find wet in the rain. He is of no concern.
So you say, but that does not mean it is true. However, my friend, this is not our only operation in this country, and with so much pressure on this particular project, I do not have the people to see it through to completion. It is a simple question of manpower.
And what of this lot?
Waiters and cooks, as you said earlier. Street soldiers I have. trained operatives, I do not. The deal is off. If, by some miracle, you manage to smuggle the item out of the country, then please contact me again.
Zalhares couldn't believe this was actually happening. He had naturally assumed this was merely some sort of renegotiation tactic, perhaps for a lowering of the price. But the Red Chinese agent had only wanted to pump them for information to ascertain the true level of danger involved, and was now dismissing them like field workers who hadn't brought in enough rice.
Goodbye. Liwa, allow our guests to leave unharmed.
By sheer willpower, Zalhares kept his expression neutral. This was a disaster. They were low on funds and needed the cash from this sale to get back home. Another bank robbery was possible, but with every public exposure, the noose of the American secret police drew tighter around their necks. They needed this deal. It could not fail.
And what if we were to assist you in your mission?
I'm listening.
We are mercenaries, and the best in the world. We will hit the target, and then you pay us.
But how could I know that you would not simply take the money and leave with the Zodiac?
Come along with us.
Interesting. Of course, I would also need to bring along some of my own people for our mutual benefit and protection.
To maintain the balance of power was more like it, Zalhares mentally translated. The Brazilians were short of cash and the Chinese were low on trained people. It was an equitable solution for both sides, in theory.
As long as the number is equal.
Naturally. Then we are partners now.
Agreed.
Partners. There was an ugly word. But the Brazilians really had no choice in the matter.
So, where are we going first?
The colonel disliked having to address several people on the same matter. It seemed that the Scion was a team of equals. They would have to be watched closely. The true danger of the mythical Hydra was not its deadly fangs, but the fact that one blow could not kill all seven heads at the exact same moment.
We shall leave for New Mexico in the morning, where you will receive your payment as agreed upon in the auction. Then we proceed directly to the target.
The sooner the better.
Part of the price in the auction had been the disclosure of what the Zodiac would be used for. That way, the Scion could plan a safe escape route and be far, far away from the strike zone when the nukes shook America to her knees.
Agreed. Liwa, it appears that the people of China will need your total assistance in this matter, after all.
Liwa nodded and turned once more to shuffle away.
And where is he going?
Nowhere. He is going nowhere at all.